lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage.
What an amazing try.
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class.
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
I'm Liam Delcombe.
Liam, I greet you in the name of the World Rugby Player Awards. World Rugby Player of the Year, but no Coach of the Year. And some very strange World Rugby Awards, which, by the way, just a caveat, isn't there a thing that the World Rugby Awards should be at least live streamed somewhere? I mean, we're not in 1976 yet. And somewhere in this world, somebody could have hooked up a cell phone with a live stream. There's all these social media platforms and just, live streamed it. But for the biggest event of the year, your showpiece, and then you tell people to follow by press release or updates on social media, is a bit bad for World Rugby.
Yeah, it's almost as if they're trying to keep it away from us. I mean, at some point, we will find out who,
when they release
the winners. Winners were. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how they monetize this, because you would have thought the bigger the footprint, the more there is for them. But that just seems like this black spot in terms of world rugby. When I say world rugby, I don't mean the organization, but the rugby per se, or where there is this we don't know what's going on, unless, of course, you're in the room. So, I don't know what their reasoning is there.
Yeah, it's obviously well known that you're the Steph one, and I feel a bit for Evan Etzebeth, who's now been nominated 3 times, still hasn't won it, certainly deserves to have been World Player of the Year, probably lost, to be very honest,
during the World Cup.
And I think, you could have chosen between any of those, and probably Auxin Chair, who wasn't nominated either. But you sort of wonder yourself, there was a bit of a discussion of when will World Rugby actually start recognizing props, because it always seems to be other positions, but never a prop.
Yeah.
So that's the other point. But I suppose the biggest snubble of the evening was Rossi not winning it, and World Rugby telling us that a French side who didn't win the World Series, who won the Olympics, is much better than Test Rugby, an 85% win record, a rugby championship, and the unbeaten end of the year tour.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think they were desperate to just drive the narrative that Sevens now count, and that Sevens, got this stage, this platform at the Olympics, and that we need to sort of maximize that. I get the messaging around that. But then at some point, it also needs to stop.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from France. They won, in fact, they won 2, and then they went on to win gold at the Olympics. So a much improved season for them. But if you look at the performances of the Springboks, 11 wins, 13 games, obviously the pressure of being world champs, World Cup holders, comes along with that. Also the way Rossi did it, because you introduced so many players into the script this season, 50-plus players. And you need to be a coach that's on top of things if you're going to do that, because obviously the more players you involve, the more you need to be involved. I mean, so, he's done an extraordinary job. It's a peculiar one. That's probably also one of those where they don't want to give everything to one country, but still, I mean, geez, if the guy's deserving, he's deserving.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I agree with giving Seven some recognition. But I mean, then we go back to the other World Rugby's darling, Anton Spont, who I say there's a caveat, because you get accused of not recognizing his talent if you don't say it. He's an exceptional player. We all know he's an exceptional player. But he played three tournaments the entire season out of the 8. He was on the bench for most of the Olympics. He came on second half, played 2-3 minutes every game, and then had a great final, came on, scored 2 tries, right? So he had a wonderful final. But now, the message
it could just be wonderful planning.
Well, it could be, but is that performance better than somebody like Terry Kennedy, who broke try-scoring records? Also, the guys who played all 8 tournaments at a high level. In fact, his French teammate, he's got a long surname, who was also nominated, was much better than him throughout the season. To me, there's players who slog away the entire season. So now you send the message that, doesn't matter what you do through the entire season, we'll bring in one player who's a name, who's a gimmick, and because he's got the talent and he catches the headlines, he's player of the year. And I don't know, that just seems, it leaves a bad taste in the mouth, especially after, you know, watching Sevens for so many years and knowing the struggles. And we're speaking later in this podcast to Philip's name on ahead of the new season, but knowing the struggles that they go through for recognition and for, you know, just support. And then something like that happens. It almost, you know, sort of says, you're only relevant when one of our top guys plays.
And I smack of that, but I'm not surprised. I mean, every chance you get to, you know, put the game in bold letters and shine bright lights on it, I mean, they'll grab. So no surprises there. I'm going to differ from you slightly about the DuPont thing. I think he perhaps even more than the coach turned around their fortunes, because if it wasn't for him, I mean, the man has an aura. There's no question. So those few minutes he came on for, and even in the other two tournaments, there's no doubt that he made a massive impact. But it's, the way you explained it, with, you know, there are guys who toil week in and week out, and they're part of the action from one season to the next. They must feel a bit gutted. But I suppose Simmons is also about the highlights reels, and you know, that is what DuPont undoubtedly provides.
Speaking of Peter Stephen Troy, he won the World Rugby Player of the Year award. I'm saying it again, probably the third time in this podcast. This was him chatting a bit afterwards about the award.
Yeah, it's a huge honor and privilege to be at this awards. Quite a hectic schedule to get here tonight, but I'm quite happy to be here. And again, it's an honor and a privilege. And then, of course, to be part of a Springbok team like we had this year is unbelievable. And the way he played and the squad that he built and the coaches you have, it's a huge honor and a privilege to be part of that squad. Yeah, again, we've got a saying with Springboks, you don't count our days, we make our days count. So again, I've been part of the Springbok team for quite a while now. And we like reasons I've learned there, especially under the coaching staff. The quarter of the moment is described quite the largest in sport, but in life at the moment as well. So it's something that I'm trying to lift the philosophy for my life, and then just try and get my best every time I've put on the Springbok jersey and every other jersey that I play. You never know when it's your last game.
I know I've been going on a bit about Sevens, but there is a Dubai Sevens this week. The Sevens season starts again. Our old friend Philip Snaywan popped in on a line from Dubai and chatted to us. So we had a great chat, and that's maybe worth it before you start your watching to know what the Blitzbox are up to this week. And it's a special welcome to an old friend of the pod who's been here a couple of times before, now starting a new season this weekend at the Dubai Sevens. Philip Snaywan now officially appointed that coach of the Blitzbox. A first tournament, defending champions, defending the title this week. And Philip, I'm going to start off with a bit of a curveball to you. Has it gone through your mind that if a couple of games went a different way at the Olympics, you might have been World Rugby's coach of the year?
Yeah, Brendan, life is all about curveballs. But then the other end, I mean, a couple of calls went against us in the qualifiers building up to it. We weren't even supposed to be at the Olympic Games. So I think there's two sides of the dice. But I think Ruthie, in my head, he was the one, but obviously I'm not the one on the panels or anything, but I think Ruthie well-deserved, and in my eyes, and that's my humble opinion, he was my coach of the year.
So basically what you're saying is if you wanted, you would have handed it back. You've done a lot in Brando at the Oscars.
Yeah, and I think it would have been different. I think very, obviously, with everything happening and going on with SA Rugby. So I think if you won a gold medal, I still believe Rusty was the one that would have got that.
Fair enough.
But maybe just start off with, how do you guys see those awards? I mean, I know because there's a lot of debates on social media, etc. And I know it's something that you guys don't really worry about too much, but I mean, Salvin did get honored in the dream team. And I suppose in the one way, it's good to see Sevens being honored, but it's a rather contentious one.
Yes, and I think everybody, that's why we play this this beautiful game. We play team sport, and unfortunately, you're not the one to decide that. The only thing that you can control is how the team plays and your role inside the team. And I think every time a person gets the Man of the Match award, they'll always give credit to their team members, and I think that's the beauty. So I don't think one can read too much into it, especially for us as South Africans. I think we focus on the results, the armband, and whoever get the coach of the year and whoever is. But it's nice to get recognition. But I think for us, it's all about the team, and I think that just sums it up. I think in my eyes, like I said, Rathi was the brain. He was, in my eyes, the best coach of the year. But for him, I promise you, everything else inside the team meant a lot more than lifting that actual award. So I think for him, goal achieved. For him, he had the team of the year, so he's happy with that.
Philip, when you think back to the Olympics, obviously a lot of buzz made of your form, and then obviously things turned around fairly quickly there. Is there anything you can take out of the Olympics where you saw maybe new or fresh tendencies, or where the game might be going into the season, for instance? Is there anything that you could pick up there that moving forward?
Yes, Liam, definitely. I think the biggest thing for us this season is obviously, yes, we want to get results and we want to be successful, but also to build depth in the squad. And we take a lot from our current Springbok team, using 50 players and still get the results, and make sure when 2027 comes, they will be a team that they can pick 50 odd guys, everybody on the same page. So building that depth, and it's not always that easy with the limited amount of players that one have. But it's important for us to get the new guys through, but also to focus on the results. And I think in the past, it showed if we can be consistent in that semi-final. And I think taking that from the Olympic Games, we need to adapt and we need to adjust our game a little bit. The first game against Ireland wasn't a bad game necessarily. We lost with one try, but we only had 15% ball possession. And then when we actually had a look at the game, we said, listen, this team can't play if we can't have ball in hand. And it's different with 15s when you play a territorial game. In sevens, you need to have ball in hand. So I think we'll be a lot more accurate when it comes to breakdown areas, a lot more aggressive when it comes to our defense. And that's something that we've been working hard on, is to get those areas right and to get ball in hand, because we know the type of player that we have in our current squad is very dangerous on attack. We just need to get away to get the ball.
Yeah, I was going to say, Philip, I think part of it as well last season was at times felt almost like on attack in terms of playmaking, Selvin was almost carrying a very heavy load almost on his own half the time. And he also had injuries, and yeah, you had those sort of things. You've now got Ronald back, and I see Ricky's back in the squad. We had a chat last time we chatted to you about Ricky's situation. It's good to see that's been sorted out. And Ronald as well. I mean, he's a great playmaker as well if he's in full. So obviously you're looking forward to those guys having big tournaments this weekend and hopefully the season as well.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's where we're trying to get to. It doesn't matter who's going to play the weekend. Everybody must be on the same page and same standards. And yes, rightfully so, Selvin, phenomenal player. And I'm so happy if there's one guy that deserves to be in that world dream team, it's Selvin Davids. He's been working really hard on and off field. His leadership skills inside the team, the way he conducts himself, the way he plays, he's just a complete and a very good human being. And now have guys back, and obviously the past is behind us now, so we focus only what's ahead. And Ricky is back in the team, looking forward and his feet again, and make sure, listen, this is his first tournament. We're not going to focus on the past, what happened. We're not going to talk about it. We've sorted that out. That's done and dusted. Water under the bridge, and we're building towards the future now. And we have a big goal, the 2028 Olympics, where we want to go all the way. But 2028 starts now already. It's not only starting the year before the Olympics. It starts now. So we are working hard with all our playmakers to get the ability to put guys in space, and also the guys in different positions to understand their roles. If we can have a guy like Impi Visser, Zane Davids, Christy Grobler, which is powerful runners, if we can get them over the advantage line, get quick ball, then all our playmakers will get into play, and then we'll see a lot of tries, like for Kieran Orkia, Shilton, Van Vaker, Donovan Don on the outside that have a lot of pace. Then we'll see a lot of tries. And for me, that's what Springbok Sevens is all about. The forwards doing the hard work, the playmakers putting the guys into space, understand where the space are, whether it's a kick behind or whether it's standard wide, and then our wingers finish it off in the corner. So I think we're heading in that direction, and that's the type of game we want to play.
With Selwyn being such an influential player, do you have to sort of try and mitigate that loss by doing things differently? Or is it steady as you go?
No, I think everybody understands their role in the team. And obviously, you can't if you lose a guy like Peter Steph, there's not somebody that can take that exact spot in the team. I mean, Peter Steph is a phenomenal player, and the same with Selvin Davids. But a guy like Ricky might bring something different to the team now, a little bit more physicality. So I think you need to play the cards that you're being dealt with. So, and I think that's where we are now. We worked hard. We lost Selvin. He will be back in January only. But I think we're in a good space and everybody understands their roles. And maybe we need to work a little bit harder. But there's also the opportunity for a new guy to make that step up now, a Donovan Don coming in, and maybe for him to find his feet. And who knows? Everybody, when you see how Billy Sonakla retired from Sevens Rock when he played 15, everybody is waiting for the next winger. And then Severus Rizwapi came onto the scene and he shot the lights out. So nobody is, nobody's replaceable, but obviously leave a big gap in the team. But I believe we have the firepower in the team that we can make up for that.
Now, it's going to sound like a cliche, but I mean, your pull this wish stand is a tough one. It seems now with the new tournament structure, they always tough pulls no matter who you get. But just how's it looking this weekend going into this pool? Your chances there? You've obviously got to start strong.
Yes, definitely. I think that's our only obstacle now and the only focus. And especially in the beginning of the season, it is always difficult to try and find cues and do a lot of analyzing on the opposition team, because some teams might have new coaches, some teams might have new players. So I think the biggest thing for us, and always Dubai, that's since I've been part of the team since 28, the big thing for us is do the basics well and focus on ourselves. And if we can get that right, we worked hard on the preseason, we fit. If we can get that right, then we can start building, and then we need to make plans later in the season. But for now, the main focus will be us. And yes, it's a tough pool, but if we can come up with that first hurdle, which is Australia, and then Kenya, and then France, yeah, I believe if we get through the pool stage as well, our quarterfinal will be the most important match, because we want to be consistent in those semifinals.
Well, how do you view the Dubai tournament? Is it one that you look at as a reliable indicator for what will likely happen at the end? I mean, I'm not sure how many teams have won Dubai and actually gone on to go all the way and win the series.
That's a tricky one. I think in the past, three times in the past, 2008-09, we won Dubai, then we won the series, 16-17, the same, and 17-18. But then also last year we won Dubai and wasn't the greatest of seasons. So I don't think you can read too much in. I do believe, however, that one can take confidence out of your first tournament. You can lay a good solid foundation and build on it. So it's important for us to get out of the blocks this weekend and to make sure we have a consistent and competitive performance to make sure we get in that top three. Obviously, every team wants to lift the trophy, but we first want to make sure we get over the first hurdle, make sure we get through our pool, and then that quarterfinal. And then what happens after that, I know that the guys will be up for it.
I'm going to ask you anyway. I know your answers. Your first part of your answer is going to be you concentrated just on this week, but next week, Cape Town. There always seems to be a lot of pressure on you guys. There always seems to be. It seems to be a tournament that you guys tend to struggle in terms of the pressure probably that you put on yourself in front of the home fans. Are you guys going to try anything different this year in terms of handling that pressure? Because I know suddenly from the rest of it, and I've been around you guys a lot to know that the scrutiny you have this week compared to next week when everybody wants a piece of the blitz box is very different.
Yes, and Brendan is the same. Yes, our focus for this weekend is game one, and the focus for now is Dubai, but also we have a big 2028 in mind, but that doesn't mean our focus. We're going to focus on 2028 this weekend already. So we've chatted about Cape Town. Obviously, we need to do things different also, as you mentioned, and that's something we added the discussion beforehand. And I think the biggest thing for me is to keep things in-house in that week. We'll bring one or two guys in the squad and who knows, if we feel like we need fresh legs, maybe make one or two changes. Doesn't mean it's not going to be that one player have a bad tournament, but maybe just we need some fresh legs into the squad or a little bit of a different, so somebody that brings something different to the party. So we'll bring two extra guys, so we'll train with 15 guys and then announce the squad a little bit later. And then also like I said, keep things in-house during the week. Try to minimize the noises from outside, focus on the small circle inside, not spending too much time at home, not going too much with your friends and family. And also on game day, in the past, after the first game, everybody runs up to their family, is going to sit in the crowd, and then everybody tells you, listen, you're a Euro, you're a this, or if you had a bad game, then they tell you how bad you were. So I think to put that, keep the noises outside of that circle and to keep it in-house. So I think the big thing that will change is on game day and especially through the week is to minimize the time with the public outside, and not that we don't want to interact with them, but do the same as a normal tour, like handle every situation the same. If you rest between a game, go and rest, don't run up to your family. And then the end of that day, we'll give guys time to go and spend an hour or 2 hours and give them basically 2 hours off completely that you can spend with friends and family before we come back. So we almost put that aside until after day one, and then the same with day two. So I think that will be our approach for Cape Town this year. And I think if we can keep things in-house, things might work out for us.
Last one for me, and keeping with that same theme, given what happened at the Olympics, the fantastic run you had there, do people look at you differently now? I mean, do you find that there is a bit more expectation? I know it's early days, but, do you feel that pressure?
I won't say we feel any pressure. I think it's more kind of relief after getting some sort of result back in with the Olympics. So, but I also believe it is good for our confidence, knowing that this team can podium, and now the guys can actually start believing in ourselves. And that's one a small word, but have a big meaning in our team, is belief. And if this team starts believing in themselves, and they showed in the past, listen, this is the guys that can do the job. If we start believing, and the guys are walking around with confidence, not that we're overconfident, we'll never be. We're also realistic. We were the last one to qualify. It wasn't the greatest of seasons. Yes, we got the results of the Olympics, but that's only the start. So for me, the ship is out of the harbor now, but now the hard work starts. So we can take confidence, but the building process starts all over again. And we must make sure now that we go from strength to strength, and we can't have one good tournament and then fall 3 places back again. So for me, consistency and that belief is the big thing for me this year.
Well, the last one from me as well. I'm going to circle back to where we started at the World Rugby Awards. It showed that if you have your best 15s player in a Sevens jersey, you win a lot of stuff, and you win the Olympics, and you win all that stuff. So my question is, when is Peter Steph the Toy going to come start playing Sevens for you?
I was actually, as a rugby asked me to write the wish list. Obviously, it's Christmas time now, and the Elves are doing their jobs. So I was going through my list, and I saw Shaky also commented the other day. But yeah, if you go through the names there, if you can get maybe a guy like a Cheslin, a Kirtley, a Grant, a Peter Steph, the Dwayne on tight head, who knows, maybe a good line-out option. No, I'm joking, but listen, yeah, it would be great. I think for me, the biggest thing is to work closer, and that's the whole restructuring in SA Rugby also for coaches and teams to work closer together. We might not have the current Peter Steph that we're in our group, but hopefully in a year from now, the new Peter Steph that we're playing is under 20 next year. Hopefully we can get him in for a season or two, and the new Cheslin Colby and the new Kirtley Orange, get those under 20s through, let them play for the Springbok Sevens for 1 or 2 seasons. Afterwards, go and play URC, go and play Springbok, shoot the lights out. Then I know we're a sustainable system inside of a Springbok rugby, and then I know there's a pathway for players. So I don't think, to be honest, I don't think Peter Steph that we will make our current side to them. And I'm joking. I don't think we can afford Peter Steph that way, but we're definitely looking forward to make more Peter Steph that way in the near future, and more Cheslin Colbys and more Kirtley Arenses.
I think you're onto something. If you've got the ear of the Elves, I mean, to get Kirtley Arens, it would be exceptional, because he is an Elf.
Yeah, no, listen, they're musicians. I can't even think. I was fortunate enough to play with most of them, and it's only a dream.
Yeah, no, I was look. I mean, there's enough examples of Sevens players going on to play for this current Springbok side, and could be Cheslin, Wacha, or even go on. So let's hope it gets back to that. But you've got a task in your hand. First thing this weekend. Good luck. We hope we'll be watching from afar. I hope it goes well for you guys. And yeah, good luck for the rest of the season as well. And we'll get you back. Hopefully, we've given these predictions. We said you're going to get you when you're back when you coach and when you're done qualifying for the Olympics. So now we're saying we're going to get you back when you want the series.
Brendan, then I can't wait for the 5th of May. So I'll be writing that into my diary. And yeah, thank you very much for the support and the kind words. Yeah, we're going to work hard. We're going to make sure we do everything in our power to our biggest goal and aim is to make the Springbok 7 system the number one 7 system in the world again. And we're going to work hard and we might not always get the results, but we're going to work hard off field and on field. And slowly but sure, we'll get there. So yeah, I'm very confident and looking forward to the start of a new era of Springbok 7.
Good luck, Philip. Good luck.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Brendan.
So let's go and carry on. Sorry, I don't know if you have thunderstorms in the background. Yeah, I hope you're not hearing it.
Make no apologies for thunderstorms.
Well, we love rain. Talking about rain, the box rain tries in Wales. Not a bad segue, that. Perhaps maybe a bit disappointing with the way they finished off so, but you can't really complain about a 45-point scoreline and all the tries they scored. But I think whatever inevitably happens, and it's not just the Springboks, we see it a lot of one-sided games, that teams that tend to get so much possession, so much ball, so much dominance, tend to waste some of it. And that's what the Box did. They certainly didn't let rip as they wanted to. They were far too good for Wales and probably could have put another 30, 40 points on them.
Yeah, look, at one point it did look in that first half as if it could be a rout. And they then, just before halftime, lost quite a bit of momentum. In fact, after halftime as well, they didn't just pick up things immediately. They lost a little bit of cohesion. The fluidity in the attack wasn't there until they sort of regained it up to a point after 50 minutes. But you could probably make that point for all three of the tests. If you're going to chop and change the squad as often as Razi has, these are the little gremlins, I suppose, that one can expect. And also, well done Wales for not dropping their bundle, because there certainly was a stage early in that game where that potentially could have happened. It's a very young squad. In fact, in those opening minutes, I thought back to that big defeat they suffered in the late 90s at Loftus. It was at 96-13 or something. I mean, that was that was very much a second, if not third string team that came out. But they did well, not to drop their bundle and sort of make a fist of it. But they were far off the pace. I mean, let's be honest. And the Box could have probably scored 20 more points.
I'd make it 30, but that's even a bet. Other than that, just looking at wider Australia's bubble was burst. You looked at the All Blacks, even though they lost against France, they certainly had a good tour all around. So I think they were pretty good. England beat Japan as we expected and pronounced themselves very satisfied with everything they've done. So quite interesting. It was a funny moment. I don't know if you saw it, went quite viral on social media. Danny Keir had some comments about Eddie Jones in his book, obviously, except disparaging comments. He told them that he's bringing out a new book.
I just ask you about how you found the last few weeks after the allegations in Danny Keir's book and the way he described you. What do you feel about that? Do you think that represents your character and who
you
are?
I've got a new book deal coming out. Just signed it today. It's called Caring About Care. So you get all the details in there, mate. So I've got pre-order forms. You can come up, leave your pre-order forms, get them hot. I'm trying to do a deal with Daily Mail, but I haven't come to the agreement yet. But if you want to read about it, then there you go.
But I think all in all, so a good year for the Box. Nothing to complain about. Next year is going to be an interesting one. Rossi said he's going to settle on 35 players. It's going to be interesting to see who makes it, who drops out, which of the World Cup winners drop out. But there might be a couple of those. Probably Willie LaRue is going to be one. He'll get to his 100, I think, and then probably fall by the wayside. But there's going to be a very interesting year just to see that. Not big tests. The two biggest tests are those ones in New Zealand when they play them. That'll be the highlight of the year. But it's going to be an interesting year going ahead. But for all intents purposes, an A-plus report card for the Springboks.
Okay. I thought the end of your tour gave a couple of guys an opportunity to remind people of what they can bring. And then for others, newer guys that came into the system that, potentially could have the opportunity. I mean, I think of Franco Mostovdu who was injured for a while and then came back. He had that first half against England. And you could see that he was a bit rusty, but then, of course, finished the tour with a massive spring in his step. Volko Lowe would be absent from the Box setup for a while. he came back in and looked like he had never been missing. That, you know, there's Jordan Hendricks who played the opening test of the year and finished strong as well right at the end. And I suppose for a new guy like Cameron Arnicom to make it on and sort of get a proper taste of what test rugby in that environment is like, get into the curve place. So I think next year also a massive year for him. But you're right, it will be very interesting to see who Rassie sort of cuts adrift next year, because next year, unfortunately, is that year where he has to do that if he's going to, you know, build towards 2027. Because there are a couple of names that they're kind of drifting close to that line.
Yeah, man, definitely. And the nice thing about those guys you mentioned, all the new guys as well, is they all go back to their franchises now, you know, with a lot of international experience. And suddenly, you know, we'll find your seat a level down, but there certainly won't be the same intensity in the games. They'll probably be able to handle big match situations a lot better, and that's going to be good. So I mean, let's go straight into the URC. Yeah, this weekend, we've got three South African games. We'll handle them first and then look at the others. A big one this weekend in Durban, Stormers Sharks. Massive one. Sasha's back for the Stormers, and the Sharks are going to be chopping at the bit. They haven't won that fixture for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one in that if the Sharks go with something that resembles their bestie, I don't know how many players will be available. If you look at the Springbok contingent that'll be back, then they'll be very tough to beat if they get something close to their best potential 23. Anything short of that, I think the Stormers have a real chance because they need to get a move on. If they're going to make a fist of it in this competition, these are the types of games now that they have to start winning. So I think it's a massive weekend for them. Well, for both teams, I suppose. I mean, they both lost ground early on. So,
it's going to be a massive game. Yeah, I think it very much depends on which Sharks players, Springbok players are available. They still aren't quite the same squad if their box are away. And I think we both know that. And the Stormers, certainly there's going to be a desperation starting to creep in there. So we'll see how that one goes. I think, to me, if the box are available for the Sharks, I tend to say they'd probably shade it. If not, the Stormers win maybe by 3 or 4 points, but it's going to be a very close game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
The Bulls go up to Connacht. That's an interesting one because Connacht won't have the Irish players at all. They're all still playing Ireland play Australia this weekend in their final sort of grandstand tour for Australia. So there's the likes of Matt Hansen, Bundy Aki, Finley Billam, and Kieran Prendergast, aren't they, for Connacht? Makes a huge difference, just Bundy and Matt Hansen not being there for them. But they do have Santiago Cordero's back for Argentina, and he had a great tour with Argentina. So, I think the Bulls, with all their box, though, the one missing element there is could be Aronson, who's gone off to Japan. That's the one they're going to lose. And it's a big one in terms of he always tends to give them a try, something that sparks them. So they're going to have to learn to live without him. But I still think this is a good chance for the Bulls to actually score their first win in Goa.
Yeah, I think their win in Italy just before the break would have been a massive confidence booster. Because they came from behind. Looked to be staring down the barrel for most of that game, and then just in those last 15 minutes, pulled things together and got the win, grounded out, and I think we'll take a lot from that fixture. I think they will win this one comfortably. I think the Bulls by 14-15.
Yeah, they've also got Johan Huisen back, so that makes a difference as well. Although with him, if he's in form, he's a great player, but we've seen also times where he dips quite low with his other form. But so I think with all their players back and the likes of Quibbs, we've seen those type of guys in there supporting them as well. Bulls victory. I don't know if I'd go as big as 14-15. I hope it would be that big, but I'd say by a score. The other South African team playing this weekend is, of course, the Lions, who've gone up to Limerick to play Munster, which is also an intriguing fixture because I was quite critical of the Lions when they played Leinster. I felt they always played to keep the scoreline down rather than being adventurous. But, you know, they did get a better result against Leinster than many teams do in Dublin. They now go to Munster, and Munster, since they played their last game, has had quite an upheaval. They've lost Graham Rowntree very suddenly. We still don't know why. He left very suddenly from them.
Well, he left also with the forwards coach.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe it's all just performance related because, I mean, they've won, what, two out of their first six. But that isn't new for Munster. They a team that tends to take a while before they get going in the URC.
Yeah, so, I mean, they've lost them as well. They obviously, John Klein came back and is now injured again. It's going to be interesting to see how many of their Irish players also are available for this fixture because Ireland tend to, obviously the guys playing against Australia will be out, but they tend not to release too many of their players as well after the internationals. So the Lions have definitely got a chance here. Thornton Park is an imposing place to play, but if the Lions play this well and they play the conditions well, and I think they play with confidence, and there's no reason they shouldn't. They've got a full strength squad there. They could cause an upset, yeah. I'm a bit wary to say they're going to cause an upset, but it certainly is possible.
It's probably the best chance they've had going to Limerick. Well, they wouldn't have had too many visits, but the point is I think they can go to Ireland with a lot of confidence. They did slip up in that last game. I take your point about, you know, you just felt they didn't fire enough shots against Leinster. And I can't have the same attitude this week because they will need to pull the trigger a few times. And there's no doubt that Munster is a little vulnerable. There's no question. They still haven't appointed a new coach. There's an interim coach, Ian Costello. They're not sick. That's the point I'm trying to make. So the Lions have a chance, but I see they've left Brenzo Duplessis behind and they've left Reinhard de Jonker behind. They will probably see action when the Lions get back for some EPCR commitments. But, you know, if you look at that, the players in that squad and you compare to what played against the starting 15 against Leinster, I think it's only Jonker that's missing. So they, by and large, have a full crop available. So, you know, they had no reason to go to Ireland with an inferior kick-on rigs.
No, exactly. And I think in terms of Reinhard de Jonker, probably that means Maurice Lowe is going to start. And that would be my guess at least. And Bart Mahika from Bake. So they've definitely got the strongest squad in a long time. So I'd like to see them be adventurous. I'd like to see them play Lions right back themselves.
Who would you have at Flow? Because
I still think probably they play their most dangerous rugby in scenarios on the field. I know Cade is the more tactical flower, I think that way.
Yeah.
But I think I'd go for Sunday. I think he just sparks things. Look, he's also one of those players, when he's great, he's great. When he's not, he's not. But I think he gives you that X factor that they're going to need to win a game like this. So, if they select the right squad, I'd go for a Lions victory. I'm going to be bold. Lions victory by 7, yeah. Because I think they've got the best chance they have in a long time.
I'm gonna go Lions as well, but by less. I think it'll be by 3 or 4.
Let's hope they don't disappoint us. Well, let's go look through quickly the other fixtures. First one up on Friday, Glasgow Warriors Scarlets. This one's quite an easy one for me. I think Franco's Glasgow Warriors are going to win this one quite easily. Scarlets are sixth at the moment, but of course, Glasgow slipping up at home. A good 15, yeah. 20 points win there for me.
Yeah, that might be frustrating for the first half hour, but you can't see past a comfortable Warriors.
Another interesting one, also on Friday, Ulster Leinster, with obviously the Irish players out. Leinster's second stringers are still very good, but Ulster definitely have a chance to claim a scalp bit. So I'm not going for Ulster. Yeah. I just think maybe they might take advantage of it. They've been disappointing at times, but they did win this fixture last time. So let's hope they do that.
The tough one, I'm still going to go with Leinster's supposed second stringers.
I think
that's very, very good second stringers.
They are, and I think the competition probably needs Leinster to lose a game some week. So let's hope it's, and then in the playoffs. But It's going to sound like we're biased against Leinster as well. Central sees Cardiff against the Dragons. Orwell's Derby, 8th against 15th. Cardiff probably will win this one, but it's going to be a tight one because it's a derby.
You want to say 15, 16, but in reality, it's probably going to be 6. So that's where I'm going to go.
Yeah. Later that night, Edinburgh, Benetton. This is an interesting one. 10th versus the 11th. Both sides have sort of lost some ground as well. Neither will. Both sides will have the internationals back and are pretty decent. And for Edinburgh, I think if they lose this one, pressure's really going to come on to them. In both cases. But I think there's probably a bit less expectation when it comes to Benetton.
Yeah, Edinburgh's been tough to predict this season. Just when you think, you know, there's a result there and the opposite happens. So a big game for them, I agree. I'm going to go Edinburgh.
Yeah, I think desperation might clinch it for Edinburgh. And then the final game of the evening, same time as the Lions, although not many South Africans will be watching this one. Zebre Palma playing Ospreys, 16th playing 14th, the bottom of the log game. Tough one to call as well. I'd probably go with the home side just for the pure reason that Welsh rugby is just not in the great space at the moment.
I'd go for nothing else apart from my own body. So I'm gonna I'll go Zebre, and probably not by more than 6%.
Yeah.
Well, that's our predictions for the URC this weekend. It's back to URC. There is a national island, Australia. It's hard to see Australia winning that one, to be honest. But with Joe Schmidt there's a bit more needle in the game. I still see Ireland winning that one quite easily, probably by more than 10 points. Australia were very disappointed against Scotland.
Yeah, the errors crept up. And if Scotland can pressurize them the way they did, then you could bet that Ireland will be even better at it. So I'm just hoping the Wallabies have a go, making an interesting game. Maybe we see a game with 10 tries. Fingers crossed.
Okay. Well, let's hope it's entertaining. You do. For whatever reason that may be. That's it from us this week. We'll see you next week again. Cheers.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.